This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good evening. This is Talking Devils, the leading independent Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by two former United youth team players to talk over another difficult week at the club. If you're watching on YouTube, if you can subscribe and like and get your questions and comments in. And if you're watching on the replay, you can comment as well. We still reply to the comments we get. And if you're listening back on the audio podcast, if you can subscribe and leave a positive review on the platform you're listening on. If you're watching on Twitter, X, as Elon has decided to rebrand it. I can't get your questions on there, but I hope you enjoy watching. If you want to join in the conversation, come onto YouTube and drop a like and a comment in the question box, and we will be happy to talk about your point of view. Joined by Lee Lawrence and Phil Marsh. Phil, I'll come to you first. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, all good. Thanks, Wayne. Everything, obviously, apart from Man United, is good. Just on my half-term holiday, so just recharging the batteries a little bit this week. Weather's been a little bit grim, so not really been doing much. Just having a bit of a chill out and yeah, looking forward to getting back into it next week, and hopefully United can turn the corner, but I'm not very optimistic, and I've said that a lot this year, but I really am not optimistic with what I've seen in the last couple of games. I'm sorry to say I'm sort of not going to be very positive today, because I'm fed up and I'm annoyed at what I'm seeing by some of the players.
Yeah, I liked how you said, like, everything's good apart from United. Like, well, unfortunately, this is the place where misery comes to live, unfortunately, in this podcast. Lee, how are you doing? You all right?
I'm okay myself, mate. But Wayne, it's going to be one of them podcasts again, isn't it, mate? It's going to be one of them. As you well know, I've seen you today, pal. Outside of the podcast, everything's fine with me and work-wise and everything, mate. Obviously, just a little bit on the miserable side with the football things. If things carry on the way they do, I'm sure me and Phil will start supporting Macclesfield Town with a few of our ex-players and mates going over there and coaches. But no, on a serious note, and I'm sure we're gonna go over quite a few pointers in this podcast tonight. There's a lot of changes need to happen, not just on the pitch, but surely off the pitch, which is now becoming mightily evident, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Yeah, good point you make about Mike, actually. Start off talking about that, because I know Sammy McIlroy very well. It's been a difficult time down there at Macclesfield. Not the easiest club to live at, by all accounts, with Robbie Savage there. I'm not going to say anything that Sammy said. But it's challenging times down at Macclesfield, and there's a heavy former United contingent that's gone down there, particularly someone who we all know of, Paul McGuinness. We were, you know, like, all done some various work with him at some point, and Paul is, you know, he's one of those people I just wish was lifetime employed by United, really. But he's down at Macclesfield. Obviously, he's been caring for Wilf, and hope that this is a good thing for him. But yeah, if he doesn't, just come back to United. We want you at United, Paul. But obviously, hope that it works out and everything. For everyone, those former United lads who were down there. I think Danny Simpson's joining there, isn't he, as well? I saw today. So, yeah, good luck to them all. Robbie Norman, how are you doing, mate? I don't know why I give you your full name there, Robbie, but Robbie Norman, indeed. Good to see you, gents. Hope you're well, he says. Hope you're doing well as well on this Friday night, Robbie. Okay. Right. We are all laughing and joking about something, but that's, you know, like you're having a bit of a laugh and smile about something, but what can you do when you're faced with what we've seen over the last week? Extremely difficult. And to be honest, I'm off for a couple of weeks after this. I'm going to be glad for a 3 weeks sort of respite from talking about United, not because I don't like talking to you guys about it, but I think we have these conversations and we talk about something in the aspect of wanting to conversationalize ourselves into hoping that something will be better. That's what I hope everyone gets from these podcasts when you listen to it. I hope from listening to you guys is that you'll give me some kind of professional insight and we'll start to make strides forward and I'll start to feel better, and hopefully the viewers and listeners will watch this and take it in and think, oh yeah, do you know what, we've been through tough times and we'll get through them. But at the moment, and I say at the moment feels like it's a 4 or 5 year spell, like going back to that season under Mourinho where it started, where he really sort of threw everyone under the bus, where he was looking at the crowd when Rashford missed, and you know, there were conflicts in the boardroom with him and Woodward over the signings and everything like that. And then he brought Ollie in, but even when we brought Ollie in, it was kind of like people doubting his experience, and a lot of us who just wanted him to do well, like you want every manager to do well, and because it was Ollie, we wanted him to do well even more. And the heartbreak of that when it didn't happen, and the toxicity and the support when it didn't happen, because everyone was saying, oh, I told you so. And it got quite personal. I suffered quite personally a lot of abuse for that because I backed the manager, as I've done with every single manager. And then you've had this sort of split in the camp ever since with Ten Hag, and it's difficult with the ownership and everything like that. We've talked about a manager getting backed, and then the second season doesn't always get fully backed with his targets because of the financial pinch, even though we've got to the Champions League, and it always feels like we're taking one step forward and two steps back. He's felt like that for six years or so, and it feels like we're there again. And the only thing, and I say this every single time we get to this point, the only thing we haven't tried is seeing how it goes, fulfilling the manager's path, you know, doing everything that he wants for that period of time. And it's easier said than done when you watch two games like we've just watched. Manchester City played us off the park. Played us off the park again. I think I made that 7 wins out of 10. Well, 10 wins since the takeover, Old Trafford. 7, this is for City, by the way, since their takeover. 10 wins, and 7 of those wins by 2 or more goals. And then obviously the Newcastle defeat. And look, you know, United once lost the League Cup title to York City 3-0 at Old Trafford. But it felt very different to what it felt like on Wednesday. And normally you would say, oh, do you know what, a League Cup game, there's not that much to sort of take from it. But it seems like there was a lot to take from it because there was a lot riding on it. United can't afford to sort of throw away cup competitions. I'm not saying they did, but they were. That was a team low on confidence, and they got absolutely mullered by Newcastle. I'm not going to ask you to talk about both of those games individually, guys, but you can talk about either as much as you want to. Obviously, with a focus on Newcastle, because that was the most recent one. So, Phil, I'll come to you first. After a week like that, and you and I were on the podcast last week, and I don't think we were very optimistic about it. But it's gone as bad as it possibly could have done.
Yeah, it was a shocking nightmare. I think there wasn't any positives really to take from that. You know, some of the players that came in who would have been looking to sort of take that opportunity and maybe give the manager some headache with his team selection moving forward, don't really think anyone did that. And then the players who were coming back, you know, Casemiro, he's obviously injured again now, but he looked well off the pace. And it was just an awful performance, Wayne, if I'm honest. I don't think there was, you know, especially the first half, I think, you know, we couldn't string any passes together. We didn't look like we had any cutting edge. We was leaky at the back. Newcastle was on the front foot and looked more lively and looked like they wanted it more, which was a massive part of it for me. I think, you know, on a cup tie, you know, when there is changes, the quality may dip, but you've still got to have that hunger and desire to try and get a result, and Newcastle was far better from 1 to 11 all over the pitch, which is disappointing. But again, I wasn't really sort of, you know, expecting anything less with these players. You know, they've shown time and time again that, you know, they're not up for a fight and they're not up for a battle and they're not willing to, you know, put a performance in on a consistent basis. It's you know, longer performance here and then they can have a couple of days off, couple of games off, and that's not good enough at any level of football. So, you know, you're sort of scratching your head, and the manager, I mean, I feel sorry for him in a way, because he must be looking at that squad now and looking at that team, and there's not anybody that's jumping off the page that's screaming out to me is, yeah, he should be, you know, nailed on to start, because nobody, and I mean nobody, not one player, has warranted that in the sort of performances we've seen, especially of late, but overall, really, all season, we've been second best in a lot of the games, even the lesser teams. You know, we haven't dominated possession or created a lot of chances. We've just sort of got away with it, or we've nicked the goal, or we've had a little moment of brilliance that's got us over the line. And I think now it's coming to fruition that, you know, when we are playing these better teams, you know, the City and Newcastle game being a prime example, we're sort of the barometer's there for everyone to see. We're miles below where we need to be. And I am worried. I think even these next couple of games now, this is probably the most important part of the season in terms of we need a result in the Champions League against Copenhagen. Otherwise, we're out of that. You know, we've got Luton at home. You know, if we don't pick up a result there, then, you know, top four, you can wave goodbye to that. And it's going to be, you know, a massive marker for us with where we are in this next couple of weeks, because I honestly can't see us qualifying or finishing in the top four or winning a trophy at all, which is a massive step back from last year.
Yeah. Lee, obviously, I mean, God, I don't even know where you begin with either of those games. The first one against City, look, I mean, even a full-strength United team could struggle against Manchester City. We accept that, because we're a long way off that at the moment. So a defence with Maguire and Evans is likely to concede goals against Erling Haaland. That is going to happen. Disappointing that City have been relatively poor this season and they looked very commanding against us. But, you know, again, not surprising. Not surprising that Newcastle beat us. Surprising, though, that they had players out themselves and were so dominant. I hate saying that, but we've been outplayed. There's only one game that we've outplayed the opponent this season. It was Palace at home in the League Cup. I've said it every single week on the pod. And we were absolutely played off the park again. Like Phil said, they were tenacious. They wanted it. And to be honest, it didn't... I've said dominant and played us off the park, but I don't think that they were brilliant. And I look at like what they did, and as soon as they got that first goal... And even you could telegraph that first goal because you could see the pass coming and Dalot didn't see it coming. He must have been the only one out of 70,000 in the city who didn't see that pass coming. It came, and then from that moment on, they just wiped the floor with us, and it didn't look like a United team that could pick themselves off the canvas. Dan, I mean, I'll ask you your thoughts on this, but also with Dan's question in mind, you know, first of all, what do you think of the Newcastle performance? And then Dan has asked you in the comments, in all seriousness, having been in many a dressing room, what do you think is going on behind the scenes? How can you not have personal pride?
When there's, you know what I'm like on the podcast, I always try and pick some kind of positive somewhere, as opposed to just being negative. If you look at the season overall, I don't think there's any positives I can actually think of, which is a real positive throughout the club. I really can't, and I know it's going to make for an awful podcast this, and I don't like moaning and whinging, but there's not much more to say than what every supporter in the land is saying. We're just not good enough. We're just not good enough at all, mate. We all say about the effort, and I get what Dan's saying about the personal pride, and that's why for the Newcastle game, everyone was shouting to bring Hannibal back in and, you know, change it around. How many times do we give the young lads a chance? They'll put the effort in, and I'm coming to the conclusion myself that, yeah, effort is a big thing, but I just don't think as a squad we're a strong squad. I don't think it's a case of keep playing and we'll get played back into form. Every game I've watched by the Crystal Palace game in the Cup, we've been second best. And the wins we've won, we've been lucky. Let's be honest, we've not deserved any win by the Palace win. The players, what we're facing against us, the other 11, they look head and shoulders above us. And I'm not talking about your Cities and your Newcastles. I'm talking as low as your lower teams. We was lucky against Sheffield United. We got battered off Wolves. Let's be honest, let's not sugarcoat it. We've been very, very lucky to get results. We could have easily lost every single game we've played this year, in my opinion. Easily lost every single game. And the games we've won, we've been lucky. For us to come from last season and be on a high and look like we're going in a direction and look like, you know, it's a good starting and a building block to work on, to go where we've gone from there to where we've gone from now in the space of not many games. For me, it's catastrophic. It's a massive, massive fall. I would go as far as saying this is probably the worst Manchester United team, squad, players, games that I've ever watched, ever. And I've got to be truthful with it. And to answer Dan's question, I don't know what's going on in the background, but there has got to be something going on in the background. You can't go from what we had last year to what we've got this year without something stinking throughout the club somewhere. We all know the problem with the Glazers. We all know that until we get new owners and until we get settled, the club's going to struggle to go in a direction, which, you know, it's obvious. We don't know the backing that Ten Hag's got. You've seen a lot of things saying that Ten Hag brought these players in from Ajax and what have you, but apparently they're not worth his first choice and he didn't get the backing. We don't know how true that is. But for me, recruitment-wise, it's been terrible. It's been terrible. I mean, prime example, and I've given this lad as much chance as I can give him to think that he's going to show me something why we've paid that price tag for him. But Anthony on the right-hand side, if I'm recruiting a right wing player, and I get that clubs play with inverted wingers now and things like that, but to pay so much for a kid that cannot and will not use his other foot, for me is bad, bad business. It's just a waste of money. You can't have a right winger what cannot go down the wing, beat a man and cross a ball. If that's the case, why sign Højlund? If we're not going to get any service over to Højlund, because we haven't got the fundamental basics of playing in a position where, what is a winger? A winger gets the ball, he takes his man on, he crosses the ball. That's what a fundamental football, that's what happens. We don't play that. We try and overcomplicate it. We put a left foot on the right wing, the right foot on the left wing. We come inside constantly. We narrow the pitch off. We get the ball took off us. We get broke on. Our back four is non-existent. Probably not their fault, but they passed it. It's rotten to the core at the minute, mate. And it pains me to say it. The other night against Newcastle, I actually watched the game in bed and I couldn't go to sleep after it, if I'm being honest. I was that angry about it. I just don't know. Until there's a change at the top, I just can't see it getting any better, mate.
And just to clarify, you mean a change in ownership? You don't mean necessarily a change in manager?
No. Do you know what, mate? Changing the manager for me is not going to do nothing. Eric Ten Hag hasn't gone from being a fantastic manager last season to a bad manager this season. All this, get rid of him, he's out his depth. He wasn't out his depth last year, was he? Let's be honest. He got us to an FA Cup final. We won the Cup. We got top four. We got Champions League football. We would have only dreamed about that the season before when he come. So I'm not having that. He's gone from being able to take us in that direction to now being out of his depth and not know what he's doing. That, to me, is a load of rubbish.
Yeah.
For me, we've seen it time and time again since Alex Ferguson left. How many times have we said the players have down tools? And to me, it just looks like they've down tools again.
Yeah.
But there's the attitude problem, but there's also, for me, the recruitment problem, and the people recruiting haven't got the ability to match the likes of Liverpool, who's recruiting well, Arsenal, who's recruiting well, City, who's recruiting well, the bigger clubs, Tottenham, who's recruiting well. These are recruiting players what are making a difference. we're recruiting players what aren't better than the players what we've got rid of, in my opinion.
We're stuck. It's a fair point, because I know Gary Neville was talking about that this week, that, you know, United, it's a really good point that he made. Neville does make good points, obviously, generally, because he's very thoughtful with his analysis. But one that he made, which I do agree with, is every signing that United make should be a signing towards, a stepping stone signing towards winning the league. And you don't see that, because the club aren't able to do that for whatever reason, even though they should be able to do that. The last sort of, I think since the Casemiro and Antony signings, where obviously those smaller down payments and heavier sort of incentive, you know, like longer instalment plans, it's obviously impacted the club's transfer policy for at least the next 2 or 3 years, unless Ratcliffe's benevolence alters that. We're hearing some reports today with some investment in the club that might be able to leverage and alleviate some of that, but we don't know until it's just speculation. All of it's just speculation. But let's a few comments here that I want to get to before we move on to the next point, which we'll be talking about Ten Hag. Ben goes on to Lee's point, which I think you're both talking about, what Gordon Hill, obviously, was occasionally on the podcast himself, United legend. He was talking about wingers, the inverted wingers that were playing and wanting to have them playing to the line and playing on other sides. So, you know, any chance that we can turn the clock back and ask for our wingers to stay wide, take on the fullback and the byline and cross into the box? Appreciate it's a radical thought. Andy Gillespie, evening Andy, hope you're doing well, mate. He agrees with Phil's earlier point, the players don't have the mentality to turn things around. Bad results under Fergie, and Fergie would scratch out the 1-0s in a back-to-basics display. It'd be amazed if this lot could do it. Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's a good point. Ben, again, says if Ratcliffe does get control of the playing stuff, he'll need to address the players and tell them that this is stopping now. It won't be tolerated any longer. Things have changed. Good grief, I didn't realise there are many comments coming in. Ben again said, every manager in recent times ends up like a supply teacher and babysitter. The children don't listen. They know the manager doesn't have the authority and they'll not be told. I think, yeah, that's a perhaps an issue that you also have. Which obviously, we're not talking about the same players anymore. Or we were talking about a transitional squad. You know, some of these players weren't players under Mourinho, so you can't blame the rot for being that long. It's an inherited culture of the club, and I think it's like you get senior players who know that their long-term future is another club, and they become a systemic part of the problem. You know, like it just goes on and on and on. Dan says there isn't a manager out there that fixes this right now. A couple of comments about Jesus, so I'm not getting political or religious in the comments. Robbie says, I've seen people criticise the potential £250 million investment into the stadium. But it is 250 million more than the Glazers put in, and I'm sure it's just a start. Yeah, I've seen people criticise that. I mean, we don't know, it's speculation. But yeah, it's a start, and that's what we need. We'll still talk about Jesus in the comments. And yeah, Jesus couldn't save us. Definitely couldn't save us. Even Tyson Fury's judges from last week couldn't save us. Having said that, you know, there is at least inward talk that Ten Hag can be saved. Not that he even needs to be saved, that the noise from the club this week in reaction to the speculation that he was under pressure, the club have robustly rejected that. And I think that's good, because I agree with you guys. I think Ten Hag is still, I still feel like he's the right man for the job. I feel like sometimes you'll see a string of bad results, and the first thing people want to do is crank up the pressure. And I don't think we're there yet. I think that there's a lot of problems, and this is what I want to talk to you guys about. I mean, the biggest issue obviously has been injuries. United have a couple of players back, but on Wednesday night, they're still playing with the complete second choice defense as they were on Sunday, you know, so there's no sort of let up there. They need the players back, and they need to, you know, Wan-Bissaka came on for a bit, but it's still three other defenders that we need to bring back. Martinez is obviously pivotal to that back line, and Casemiro only just back himself. And yes, all right, he's been in poor form, but the difference that he might have playing alongside Martinez as he was last season. Obviously, they were two of the best players, if not the two best players that we had, and they've both been a miss. I guess that's what I want to come to first of all with you, Phil. Like, you know, obviously that we've got injuries and people are talking about Ten Hag's tactics and saying that he's been a little bit more pragmatic. And there was this quote earlier in the week that, you know, Ten Hag said that he can't play Ajax-style tactics. You can't expect that here. And today in his press conference, he's actually addressed that and saying, no, what I actually meant was that I wanted to adapt that with Manchester United DNA. So he's obviously been misinterpreted somewhere. And I can understand that, you know, people will read into things what they want to read into. And it did seem like not a complete quote what Ten Hag would have said, you know, I can't play the football that I want to play. He wouldn't say something like that and throw the players under the bus. And he did clarify that today and saying, you know, he's actually praising the players, which a manager in his position has got to do, really, and sort of saying that they can play a multitude of different ways. Where do you, I mean, do you have concern about his direction in terms of once the players are fit, do you think that things will improve, or do you think that there's an issue there that's been caused by this recent form that will be difficult to fix regardless of the injuries being solved?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, the first point is, you know, we have got players missing at the back that are crucial to the way that we want to play. I think the way Ten Hag sets up and, you know, how he likes to play out the back. Martinez, you just mentioned, he is a massive part of that because he's so comfortable on the ball and he can receive a ball off the goalkeeper and get his playing out from the back. I think obviously Luke Shaw as well is a big miss, and I think that's probably a little bit of a reason why Rashford's not really flourishing at the minute, because they have a good relationship, and when them two are, you know, playing together and they've got that chemistry, I think we see probably the best out of Rashford. However, I think, you know, looking at the players that have been playing recently due to the injuries, you know, they're all international players. We should be able to be doing a lot better than we have been doing, and that's no excuse really to sort of, you know, look at the way we've been performing and sort of how we've been playing and sort of the lack of ideas and creativity. We just don't really look like we've got any sort of style or philosophy in the way we're playing, whether that's down to the players. I think a massive part of that as well is the midfield, the balance in the midfield. We've not been able to get that right at all. Again, a lot of that's come down to injuries and stuff, but I think Erik ten Hag is sort of scratching his head and trying to find a sort of trio in the middle there that sort of can rely on and that we can be defensively quite sound and sort of, you know, look comfortable when we're out of possession, but also have that creative side and look at, you know, when we're going forward, have we got someone who can pick a pass and break the lines, which I don't think at the minute, you know, other than probably Eriksen. But then when he plays, you've got the problem of not having the legs in the midfield. So it's a difficult one for him at the minute. I think until he can get that back four back into play to give us that solid foundation, we aren't going to see anywhere near the best of you know what we've seen last season. But I come back to the point again. It's you know, this year, you know, albeit we've had injuries, you know, some of these players that are coming in and stepping in, they're not, you know, average players. They're all international players, and they should be doing a lot better. They shouldn't be using that as an excuse to say that, you know, we can't be expecting to hit the heights and perform as well as we have because we've not got X, Y, and Z. For me, no. You know, you look at other teams when they miss players, they bring other players in who are just as good, if not better. And the style of play and the philosophy and the sort of the tempo and the sort of standard remains the same. Whereas, you know, when we do it, you know, we're levels below where we need to be. And you know, all season really, we've not been hitting anywhere near the heights that we've been expecting from last year. So, you know, we're hopeful that when the injuries do come back, we will start seeing a little bit better. But again, a lot of it comes down to recruitment and players that are coming in who are there to, you know, be called upon when needed. Have been far, far short of, you know, where we need to be.
Yeah, Lee, interesting thoughts there from Phil. And you literally, you were talking about about backing Ten Hag and that he hasn't gone to become a bad manager overnight. So I guess he's still got some kind of conviction in his tactical strength, regardless of the fact, you know, that he's playing the inverted wingers and you like to see them perhaps be a bit more direct.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And normal sided on that, on those, on the flanks. You look at the issues this season, you know, with the injuries and obviously the tactics have been an issue as well, in terms of how we've adapted to that. Do you think he could have done better with this? I mean, I look at it and I think maybe the injuries revealed, exposed maybe a bit of an older issue that's been lingering around the squad, in that they're not really good at coping with adversity. You know, like you get one bad result and then it's like, oh, the season's gone, that kind of thing. And then they just not necessarily throw the towel in, but it's kind of like everything just sort of goes down, you know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say? Like everything just goes away and the confidence goes. And as we all know on this podcast, having followed United and played for United as you have, you two have, that yeah, confidence is possibly the hardest thing to get back in football. It's a long journey to recapture that. I guess I'm rambling really, Lee. I'm asking you, Ten Hag, really. Do you feel like he's culpable in this, or do you think that once, you know, do you think his tactical approach is generally all right, considering the injuries that we've got?
If I'm being 100% honest, Wayne, I feel really sorry for Ten Hag, and that is me being down to a T. I really do feel sorry for him. Like Phil said, the injuries have been awful for us this season. We've not got a strong squad, so you start taking four or five of our first team regulars out of that, and for wanting of a better word, we're buggered, if I'm being honest with you. No disrespect to my old teammate and Phil's Johnny Evans, but I'm sure when we give him that 1 year contract, we didn't be expecting him to be in and around the first team as much as he has been. And I'm sure Johnny didn't expect that. I'm sure he probably got signed for his experience and his knowledge, what he could pass on to the young lads and things like that. You know, he started as much games as anyone. Which is telling you what's happened to this squad this year. We've signed a goalkeeper in Onana, which he has the last couple of weeks looked like he's starting to show us a little bit of why we bought him. But you can't tell me you've got 100% still confidence in him. So it's starting from the back, our keeper. Well, players probably not got 100% confidence in him also, as well as the supporters. The back four, we're playing a centre back who's right footed at left back. A lot of the games in Lindelof. Best player by a mile for me last year, Martinez, which you've already gone on about, is the biggest loss for me that we've had. Varane now seems to have he's always got an injury problem, but now he seems to be having a problem with not being picked. That's been mentioned. And whether he's crying off sick, we don't know. So that's showing that there's problems in the camp. We're starting Eriksen, who's a wonderful player. But for me, Eriksen now is a player what we need to come on with 60 minutes to change a game. The injuries have absolutely battered our season for me, absolutely killed our season. That's why I feel sorry for Ten Hag. He can only deal with what he's got available. Again, for the wing situation, for me, that needs to be addressed and be addressed quickly. I think we had a conversation today and it sounds madness. It sounds absolutely madness, me even saying it. And Bello, for me, was at, you know, he was at fault the other day for the goal. He actually, he looked at the lad twice before the ball even got past there. So it's not as though he didn't even look over his shoulder and all the lad weren't there. He knew he's still humbled back. But I think, like I said to you today, as if in our squad now, if we want to put someone on that right wing, he's going to beat a man and he's going to put a ball across. At the minute, the only player I can see, and it's going to be controversial as hell, would be Dalot. I think I'd put Wan-Bissaka at right back and put Dalot at right wing in the next game. And I'm not saying it's the answer to anything, but at least we know we're going to have someone out wide. He's going to run, he's going to try and beat a man, and he's going to put a decent ball in. At the minute, on the right, it's non-existent. It's just, there's nothing there. Nothing at all. There's not much on the left, don't get me wrong. But on the right-hand side at the minute, there's just nothing there to feed off. So tactically, I think he's getting that a little bit wrong. But with the cards being dealt, mate, there's not a great deal for me more he can do.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, even Garnacho, he looked maybe... This is the problem with having a big squad like United have got, stockpiled in some areas. We were on the left hand side all last season. It seemed like we had an embarrassment of good players there in terms of Rashford, Garnacho, Shaw, Malacia, and it's all each other on. And this season, right, I know there's a bit of interference with my mic here. I don't know what's going on there. I'm just trying to make sure that the audio's right. We had an embarrassment of riches on that side, and now it's an embarrassment at the moment, unfortunately. Just a plain embarrassment. Before we talk about Fulham, I'm noticing the number of guys in the chat tonight were regular viewers and listeners. I'm talking about Ben and Dan and Robbie, who are here like almost every week. And, you know, we do have a couple, another Ben who comes in on the podcast. He listens back if he's not watching live. And we do have a couple of other guys who tend to watch us on Mondays as well. You know, obviously it's a tough time at the moment. I do talk to all of these guys as well off the podcast. And, you know, this is just more of a mental health thing, you know. It's good to have all these guys checking in and talking and spending a little bit of our Friday nights together and having a chat and just getting something off our chest to talk about United. So feel free to, you know, continue to do that. Even off the pod, you know, we're always on Twitter conversing as well. So it's good. I really appreciate all you guys, and I'm sure that feeling's mutual among us all. We're all good lads. Anyway. Fulham. Okay, so now we're talking in the length of, Champions League qualification looks like it's a distant hope. The objective is getting a team and a team spirit. Ten Hag's got to deal with that. Lee, I'll come to you first with this. It's obviously a matter of emergency for him to sort of deal with this kind of thing. So what does he do first and foremost? Does he say, all right, the injuries? Can't deal with that? Or does he say, you know, I've got to try and make the best out of this? You know what I mean? What I'm trying to say is, does he make the hard calls now, get some players out of the side and say, all right, I've got to do this going forward? Or does he just sort of, does he try and compromise? Does he come up with a different shape that gets him through to a moment where he can make that compromise?
Yeah, I was just going to say, personally, the only thing what I could think of him doing is playing plays on merit. And like Phil said, there's not many plays you can play going off the games what's been being played on merit, because there's no one really what warrants a start. But when I say play him on merit, I mean, have they trained all week? What effort have they put in? Not even necessarily the ability, what they've shown when they've been in training, because give me a team of lads who will work the socks off every week, 11 lads, then give me 11 prima donnas who's got every bit of ability in the world but won't work for the team. So for me, he only can choose the lads who's putting it in, whether they be young lads, whether they be lads, Dan Gore, for example, who's really, that have, you know, any minute, Kobe Mayne, who, if they're showing hunger and desire, give them a go. It can't get much worse. But with the way we have been playing and the set up what we have been setting up, it's not been working. do we need to go back to a defensive structure? I mean, it'd be nice to see. I mean, it can't happen now because Casemiro's injured again. Surely to God, we brought Amrabat, and when we brought Amrabat, we was all thinking the same. It's going to strengthen the midfield up with Amrabat and Casemiro there together. And obviously, we've not really seen that yet. So that's another thing where once we get Martinez back, Luke Shaw back, Wan-Bissaka firing all cylinders on the right back, and hopefully another centre back, because I think Varane isn't the answer because he's so injury prone. And then we've got a solid back, you know, two sixes there with Amrabat and Casemiro. We might start seeing improvements and being solid, because all season we've been absolutely run over in midfield, absolutely run over every game. So whether he goes back to more of a defensive structure with two sixes like they did with McTominay and Fred, and I'm not saying that was great or whatever, but we need to shore up in midfield, not against just the best teams, against any team. So, yeah, Pitt plays on merit and how they're playing and how they're training, but also, for me, I think he's going to have to go back to more of a defensive structure with probably two number sixes.
And how do you see it going against Fulham?
I hate being pessimistic. I really, really hate saying that we're going to lose. But I'm right in thinking we're away, aren't we, at Fulham? We're not in good form. Fulham's going to smell blood. I just don't think we've got the ability and what's available. I know this sounds stupid, but it being Man United versus Fulham, I don't know whether we've got the ability, what we've got available, and the attitude to win the game. I'll be deadly honest. I don't want to ever go against saying that they're gonna get beat, but I'll go for a draw, mate. I'll go for, and I don't know how disappointed I'd be if we get a draw, if I'm being honest. And again, that sounds ridiculous, but away at Fulham, if we get a draw, this is how I'm feeling at the moment. It's not the end of the world for us, because it could be a whole lot worse with what we've seen up to now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's tells you the pessimistic mood and the Dan 2-0 Fulham, because well, we had that someone was saying that on the Monday morning podcast. There was some pessimism on that one as well, and they were right, unfortunately. Wayne, it's my prediction, so I'm using the reverse cycle. I genuinely do. You have no idea. Every match day he gets told off for it, and I'll tell him in person I don't like him doing it, but I'm here for the reverse psychology. That's fine, you won't get any telling off for that. In moderation, obviously, in moderation. Too much of it Dan, and won't be enough rope to save you. I'll be angry with you that way as well. Phil, it's a tough one for the manager at this moment in time, because you look at it and you look at the table, you say, all right, no title challenge, Champions League, you know, emulating what we did last season isn't going to happen if we're all being realistic. And Champions League qualification is very, very a remote possibility. It doesn't look like it's, you know, serious miracles will have to happen in order to make that something that we can do. It's not going to happen, really, if we're being fair. Even though I think that was a fair expectation at the start of the season. So what does he do in this short term? Because you're looking at players like Rashford and Bruno under a lot of criticism. Both of them were rested for their game the other night. United, you know, they haven't been playing well with them. They haven't played... didn't play well without them. I was one of those people perhaps advocating for a big change in players that we did the other night. You know, we made a few changes, but nothing really positive came out of it. So what does Ten Hag do at this moment in time? Does he go for the big, bolder changes and sort of say, all right, this is the way that I'm going to stick with it? You know, we're not going to get qualified, but I need to show unity in this squad. Or does he just go, look, this is a sort of higgledy-piggledy bunch of players and I need to get them through this period, and he can't afford to take any more chances with the injury crisis still there? You know what I mean? Is the objective now, we're looking at the bigger picture, aren't we? We're looking at him. How does he better pad his own bed in saying, I'm going to be safe going forward? You know, knowing that, you know, he could make all these changes and we could still suffer big result, big defeats like we did the other night. It's catch 22 for him. So what would you do in that situation?
if it was me, if it was my decision, Wayne, I would ring the changes. I think, you know, these players that have been, you know, putting in the performances and the attitude and no, not really seeming like it's bothering him, I would be making big decisions, and I would. I think, you know, you've got to be ruthless. I think, to be fair, the manager's got to be feeling a bit of pressure as well now, you know. The results, the performances, you know, losing again at Old Trafford, it's not good enough. And if it's me, you know, I'm making three or four changes against Fulham, and I'm putting in players who I know that I'm going to get, you know, maybe not the technical ability or maybe not as good on the ball, but I know that they're going to come in and put a shift in. And I'm just looking at it from a perspective of, you know, what have I got to lose, really, because performance levels have been nowhere near good enough with the so-called better players. All right, we've got injuries, but, you know, we're still picking players that should be good enough to perform and should be good enough to get us some results. And we've been nowhere near it. So I think if it was me, and I hope he does this, I hope he makes three or four big changes and drop some of these players who again, we've said this a lot of times about, you know, reputations and thinking that they're too good to be dropped, you know, not having that sort of competition at the minute where they feel as though, you know, their place is under threat. I wouldn't be having any of that. And I think the manager's shown that he has got that ruthless streak, and he's done a lot of stuff since he's joined the club, you know, with the Ronaldo situation and stuff like that. So he's definitely got that in him. And for me, that is the way I hope he goes, because, you know, these next couple of games are massive, and if he just carries on playing with the same players who are continuously putting in lackluster performances and doesn't really seem to be doing anything, I think the pressure will intensify, and you know, he could be, you know, looking down the barrel, really, if we're not, you know, if we lose in the Champions League against Copenhagen and we lose another couple of games in the Premier League, it's like season's over by Christmas. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, there might be someone looking at that and thinking, you know, that's not good enough. We need to make a change. I hope that doesn't happen, because I'm all on board with keeping Ten Hag, and I think it wouldn't make a difference if you brought another manager in. But again, I think he needs to help himself by making these bold decisions and giving, you know, some of these other lads an opportunity. You know that you're going to get the work and the sort of bare minimum, really, if you like.
Phil, just... When you say you'd make the changes to the squad, and I completely agree with you, don't get me wrong. What kind of players are you thinking? Are you thinking as actually going as far as maybe bringing Kobbie Mainoo in, who's maybe been in Dan Gore, maybe the keeper? Are you thinking of making such a bold statement? Because I think that's what I would do if the players were training.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe not all of them, but, you know, at least a couple. And then, you know, I'm looking at other players who's maybe not being given a fair crack of the whip at the minute. And, you know, people like Rashford, who's, you know, putting in poor performances, and his body language and the sort of work rate that he's not putting in. That, for me, you know, I think Ten Hag has a bit of a soft spot for Rashford, and I think that's his main player. And I get that, because obviously last season he was so good. But you can't carry players. You can't have passengers on the pitch. And I think at the moment in time, you know, we're looking at a game there and we're carrying two and three players. And against any team, you know, no matter who you're playing against, you need 11 players on the pitch that's committed. And for me at the minute, we're sort of, you know, struggling to look at seven or eight players that are even doing the bare minimum.
What would you do on the right-hand side, Phil? What would you,
do you know what I might do?
Would you play Anthony, or would you just drop him?
No. I mentioned this the other day when I was just chatting. I said, if maybe he doesn't want to drop Rashford and keep him in the team, I might just say, you know, at the minute, we've got no Luke Shaw at left back. You're not hitting your form on the left-hand side. Do me a favour. Go on the right-hand side, and all I want you to do is just beat your man.
Just beat your man, whip a ball in.
I'm not bothered about you scoring. I just want you to get past your man, whip a ball in, and then you're playing to Hoyland's strengths there. And that possibly could give us a different dimension in the attacking third.
And then what would you do on the left? Would you stick probably Garnaccio on the left, keep him on the left, and then stick, or would you try Anthony on the left?
It might be worth swapping them two over and just giving him a shout and just say, listen, Anthony's always trying to cut back onto his left foot and come inside and get his shots off. no, I don't want you to do that today. I want you to stay on the left-hand side. I want you to just get past your man and just whip a ball in. Yeah, just even you don't even have to beat a man sometimes. Just get a touch out your feet, deliver. Because at the end of the day, Hoyland's come into the club and he must be turning his hair out thinking, you know, I'm trying to get in the box. I'm trying to get myself into positions. I'm making runs and nothing's coming in. And even when you do make a run, people are chopping back. And
All Hoyland can do is show to feet at the minute in time because they're chopping back in. They can't go over the top because they're narrowing everything up. So all he can do is come to feet. He can't spin. Yeah. He can't get on in the crosses. This is the criticism I've got of Ten Hag, and it's the only criticism is what he's doing isn't working. So like I mentioned Dalot, but that was in the back of my mind with Rashford. I know he's not necessarily flourished before on the right, but if his instructions is get that ball, get past that man, push the ball in. He's got a fantastic cross. He's got a great right foot.
Just
give it a go. All the people want to be on the left-hand side with Anthony is quick for six paces. After that, I don't think he's got the speed. He doesn't look like he's got the speed, does he?
I know. Well, that's why I'm saying though. Sometimes, is again, like we're looking at older wingers back in the day. You know, Beckham, prime example. You don't even need to beat a man. Sometimes you just get a touch out your feet and just whip it in behind the back four. And we've got players like Hoyland who will get into them positions. And
how many goals did we used to get years ago when we used to have Beckham on the right? Gavin Neville overlapping. Gavin Neville weren't the best footballer in the world. Everybody knows that. But the relationship they built up and the early balls and the crosses they got in. Where's the club gone now where that's gone? It's completely gone.
Do you know the biggest thing though as well, Lee? When you know that you've got players who are playing in that, like Van Nistelrooy must have been rubbing his hands every week thinking, I'm gonna be on in that position and I know at least 10, 15 crosses are gonna get delivered during the game. So he can just put himself in a position and he just has to make runs in the box. For Hoyland now, he must be thinking, I don't know when the next cross is coming. I don't know if he's going to get half a yard and he's going to cross it or he's going to chop back. I don't know whether, you know, they're going to try and play into my feet or what. He must. So that's why I'm saying this isn't a long-term solution, by the way. I just think for the next couple of games, I'd make a few changes and I might even just say, try Rashford on the right, try Anthony on the left. Just say to him, listen, lads, you know, I'm looking at a style of play where I just want you to beat a man or get half a yard and just deliver balls in the box.
Yeah.
Someone else is like a McTominay coming in as well as an attacking midfielder who's going to support Ireland because you need.
I think they're going to play McTominay, and I never ever thought I'd say that again. But I think off form of this season and off a goal threat, I think he's still our top goal scorer.
Yeah.
It's an absolute madness. But if you're going to go off that, you've got to play him. And it just seems mental saying that in this. Today,
it's frustrating, but I think at the minute that I was thinking about this, like obviously the other day, and I was thinking, how can we get the best out of Hoyland? And obviously, we've got a couple of wingers who are struggling at the minute. Maybe can we do something to change it up and just give them a bit more of a, you know, license to just not feel as much under pressure as to deliver goals and assists and stuff? Well, maybe assists. But can we just get him to say, listen, your job today, as soon as you get the ball, I just want you to try and beat your man or get into a position where you can cross a ball.
Ireland, you'll know more than me, Phil, but Ireland must be thinking at the moment in time as being a striker, unless I do this on my own, I'm not going to score the goal. So like
all the goals he scored, apart from the one where Rashford whipped it in from the right-hand side. All the goals he scored, he's had to sort of create himself. He ran from the halfway line. He's, you know, at Bayern Munich, it's one where he's just, you know, a bit of, you know, where he's just had to sort of pick a ball up and get into the box and score. But for me, he's the type of striker who, you know, previously he'll have been playing in Serie A and he'll be getting balls in the box all the time. And that's what he'll be feeding off. And I feel sorry for him because at the minute, he looks like he's all of his energy is being used up by pressing and going closing people down, and he's not a massive strength is holding the ball up. He wants to be running behind and getting on the end of things in the box.
I just hope he's got the right attitude where his head doesn't go down and his confidence is affected by it. You know what I mean? Until we get the right system to play, really. Hopefully, fingers crossed, he's got the right attitude and he's been brought up with the right attitude to just keep going, you know what I mean? Because it's quite easy for players to lose confidence, like we've seen with Rashford a couple of times. When he's on his game, he's on it, but it's so easy for him to lose his confidence. I just hope that doesn't happen to Ireland.
Must be frustrating, though, for him, because think about the amount of money he's coming for, you know, the amount of games he's played recently and the lack of chances that, you know, he's been given to sort of score any goals. As a centre-forward, you're going on the pitch thinking, my job today is to try and score a goal. Yeah. You're feeding off scraps week in, week out, and you're not really getting any, you know, good opportunities to put the ball in the back of the net. There's nothing worse as a centre-forward because you're not being able to do your job. You're not being able to, you know, fulfil your sort of potential because the players around you aren't delivering, you know, what your wingers should be delivering and your creative midfielders should be delivering. Like, look at the other teams in the league. How many chances does Haaland in a game, how many chances does he get every week? He must get 6 or 7 good chances. No wonder he scores 2 or 3 every week.
And that's drifting in and out of the game. That's not being involved for 30 minutes or something. But he's always going to get them chances because he's got them players around him, which are always going to create at the minute. Like, so we're not creating from the wings and our midfield players aren't doing it. So he's left down, like you said, scraps at best, isn't it? You know what I mean?
And it's not like they can't do it because I'm watching other teams. Me, like, I watched Brentford the other day against Chelsea, and someone like that, Mbeumo, like, honestly, like him, I looked at him and I was thinking, do you know what? He would be a fantastic signing for United. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
I've said exactly the same, man.
You'd pay probably a third of the price for what you paid for probably Anthony and Sancho and all these other people. And he's somebody who every week he puts a shift in. Gets himself in areas, he puts balls in the box, he gets goals. And I'm thinking, why can't some of these players do that for us? Like, you know, these are players that should be levels above and Mbeumo or something like that.
Does that come down to recruitment, Phil? That, like I said earlier on in the podcast, recruitment's way, way off at the minute with a way off pull. Yeah. Sorry, Wayne, I know we've digressed a little bit there, mate.
Sorry, Wayne.
No, it's all right. Always good to. I'm quite happy to sit back and listen to you guys talk. You guys know what you're talking about more than what I know. And it's really good to sort of like the best thing about this podcast is when you guys get your this meat on the bone and you two want to get into it. So it's great listening to that. And I agree with everything that you're saying. I just hope that it's difficult to know if the penny can drop with the. With the team by lunchtime tomorrow, but let's hope that it can. And, like, you know, if they showed the kind of desire for the club and passion for it that you two do, then we wouldn't have a problem. That's what Dan's saying in the comments there. You know, what's missing, the thing that the manager wanted more than anything, intensity. Well, I mean, the cheapest, quickest way to do that is to give it the injection of youth. The issue that you've got with that is what we saw on Wednesday night. Is like, it's always better to introduce that youth into, and we talked about this so many times last season when the form was poor. What kind of environment do you put them kids into? Do you put them into an environment where it's positive? Obviously, you do, but then you risk upsetting a winning team when United, you know, they need a run of wins. Do you risk putting them into an environment where they could? It could be swallowing them up. And really, that's the dilemma for Ten Hag as well. And I mean, it's going to be 3 weeks until we're all sat on this podcast again. And I hope that when we are, I'm not being too pessimistic, I hope that Ten Hag's still the manager and that the results are going the right way for us. But we will be back in that time. If you've enjoyed watching on YouTube and Facebook, if you can like and subscribe on those platforms. If you have been watching, if you can share the video on your socials as well. It'd be really helpful for us. If you've listened back on the audio podcast, I'm really sorry about the audio issues. I think they've been on my end tonight. So I do apologize for that. If you have listened and you've enjoyed the guys talking, if you can subscribe and leave a positive review on the platform you're listening on, we would be very, very thankful for that. Until then, yeah, the guys were mentioning Fulham, they were mentioning the Copenhagen game. So, 3 games that are on paper winnable for United. But then again, you know, we're talking about a United team that have been outplayed in all but one of the games this season. So, fingers crossed. We'll be back. I think Dave always back on Monday morning with Paul Parker. So obviously the quality of that conversation will improve while I'm away. I'll be able to watch and say, hey, these guys make sense without me. Yeah, have a great weekend, a great week, and rest of the time that I'm away, guys. And I'll be back soon with these guys to talk about United's form, which will have hopefully picked up. Take care. And thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.